guys please share with us your journey, how you got to Sundays?
We joke that we made the food for Mabel, our own dog, but it's honestly true.
Our food to this day is actually made in a USDA monitored jerky kitchen that makes snack jerky.
You looked at something like kibble and said, you know, we can't get the meat content that we want to in there. Jerky, I mean, that's exactly what it is high amount of meat or only meat, and it's, you know, air dried or dehydrated to some degree.
I would say almost every other dog food out there on the market, when they say all natural, there's a little asterisk and it says with added vitamins and minerals. And I said, I don't want an asterisk. I said, if we're all natural, we're all natural, period. I wasn't going to let us get to launch and get to market unless we were doing everything, you know, exactly how I felt was the best possible way to do things.
One of the main problems you face as a pet parent is the daunting challenge of finding high-quality dog food that's both nutritious and attainable. Many of us lead really busy lives, and as much as we want to do right by our pets, the time and knowledge that it takes to create homemade meals is not readily available. Sunday's Food for Dog addresses this issue by offering an air-dried food which is healthy and easy to serve, saving you valuable time without compromising the health of your dog. The air-drying method helps to preserve nutrients and flavors, providing your dog with a meal that is healthier than traditional dry food, but easier than homemade or frozen food. This innovative approach to dog food preparation means the nutrients in Sunday's food are locked in, making it a tastier and healthier option for dogs. Sunday's Food for Dogs is committed to solving common problems pet parents face by providing a convenient, high-quality, and appetizing food option for dogs. By choosing their dog food, you can ensure your furry friend's meals are balanced, packed with vital nutrients, easy to serve, and likely to be enjoyed by even the pickiest of eaters. Use code THEBKPETS for 35% off and enjoy the episode. So first of all, Tori and Michael, thank you so much for being on today. It's always very special when we have, you know, the founders of businesses come on, because this level of transparency and being able to talk just doesn't really exist outside of this niche of the pet industry, it seems. So thank you both for being here today.
Yeah, we're super excited to be here. Thank you so much for having us.
Can you guys please share with us your journey, how you got to Sundays?
I like to joke that the reason Sundays exist is because a veterinarian married a software engineer. So my background is more in tech startups, Silicon Valley, software engineering, product design. And, you know, Tori's devoted her whole life to animals since she was 4 years old and, you know, knew she wanted to be a vet. The really long story short is a couple of years ago now, you know, we really went down this rabbit hole of what we were feeding our dogs and why, and realized that there wasn't anything out there we felt great about. And, you know, felt like we need to make a hard choice between either kibble, which was easy, but very heavily processed, or some of the refrigerated foods, which were human grade and better, but opposite set of problems, so expensive, so messy and complicated. And we wish there was a better way, and ultimately kind of brought our pretty diverse skill sets together to make that kind of third way of dog food that was both easy and high quality, and made it Sundays. And that's, you know, 5 years and a minute or less, but, you know, a lot of other stuff. And I can maybe let Tori speak a little bit about her journey as a veterinarian.
Yeah, so honestly, we joke that we made the food for Mabel, our own dog, but it's honestly true. Like, we first and foremost made the food because we wanted something better for our own dog. And to this day, every batch of food we make, you know, we make for our own dogs. Now we happen to sell it with, you know, and, you know, share it with a few other couple thousand dogs. But it honestly just started as something for our own personal you know, pets, because they were so important to us. I've always been super passionate about dogs. When I was 4 years old, I wanted to be a vet. I feel very lucky that I grew up and was able to accomplish that dream of mine. From a young age, my life has just revolved around dogs. I actually threw my dog a birthday party when I was in third grade, in case you're wondering how cool I am. And I, like, brought invitations to school and I was all excited. One of my first jobs, I like to joke that I peaked young. I was actually the lifeguard at the dog beach outside Chicago where I grew up, which honestly was like the best job ever.
Hard to beat that. Let's be real.
My job was literally to sit on the beach and like I'd read a book and like make sure the dogs didn't fight and that people cleaned up after their dogs. So maybe one day I'll retire and go back to my old gig.
Did you ever have to rescue a dog from the water? Or
some people would like put their dogs in the water and be like, oh, you can swim. And I'd be like, no, Fluffy can't swim. And I'm like, no true rescues. But honestly, like everything I did just revolved around dogs. In high school, I'd spend my weekends instead of partying, I'd be at dog agility competitions. Once again, very cool over here. But dogs have always just been a passion of mine, and they've always been such a huge part of my life. And, you know, as I was saying, we just wanted to do the best for our own dogs. And it's just amazing what it's grown into. But still to this day, every batch of food we still make it for our own dogs. And that same level of, desire to create the best food for our own pets is put into every single batch we make.
I love that. And so, Dr. Torrey, I'm curious about your journey as a veterinarian, because I'm sure with you being in this world, you know that when you go to vet school and you come out, there's not a lot of infinite emphasis on what I would call this side of the nutrition argument. So where did that continuing education come from that really allowed you to look at what our dogs were actually eating and conceptualize something better? Or were you always thinking about that going through vet school?
Yeah, so I would say, I got a good education, a good foundation in my undergraduate and graduate studies for nutrition. So in undergraduate, I majored in animal science, and I learned a lot about formulating diets. And during my undergraduate career, I was formulating diets for my animal science program for a multitude of different species, honestly, a lot of different livestock, but it kind of gave me that experience with those formulation softwares and things along those lines. And then in graduate school and vet school, obviously, I learned a little bit more about dog nutrition, but it was, unfortunately geared a lot more towards the kind of kibble type foods. Once we started kind of going down this path of creating an alternative diet, I received a certificate in animal nutrition and pet nutrition specifically from the University of Illinois, and that certification program, they emphasized heavily alternative pet food manufacturing. And so I learned a lot through that certification program, and they brought in a lot of experts that I learned from. In addition, I surround myself with different experts in the field to make sure that I'm always up to date on all the most recent, research and, whatever kind of the newest information is. And at the same time, I think we can also, unfortunately, one big issue in veterinary medicine, and this is not just nutrition, this is kind of every aspect of veterinary nutrition, is that there is not a ton of research dollars put towards, research in veterinary medicine like there is in human medicine. For example, in human medicine, you'll often see case reports with thousands and thousands of people that, patients in these case reports or in these studies, whereas in dogs, you're lucky if you see, 8 to 10 dogs in a study, whether it's for surgery or nutrition. This is not particularly nutrition. This is just kind of a shortcoming of veterinary medicine,
right?
Because unfortunately, there's just not the same funding available as there is in human medicine. So I've also turned to human medicine to look at kind of the benefits of a fresh diet, the benefits of eating whole foods in human medicine as well. And I think we can extrapolate a lot. I think, no one would argue that eating McDonald's and then taking a multivitamin every day is the same as eating a well-balanced diet and getting all of your, vitamins and minerals from fresh fruits and vegetables and lean
proteins. Some might say that, to be honest.
I guess there are some lobbyists out there.
On the internet.
I might have heard that a time.
Here come the McDonald's lobbyists. I think there is, a lot that we can extrapolate from the human literature as well. And so I think just combining all of that, and then, just my natural skepticism as, a scientist, but also a pet parent, and just wanting to always make sure to do best and to kind of read between the lines and, do things a little differently and be willing to say, okay, but do we have to do it that way? And how can we do better for Mabel and other dogs as well?
Absolutely. Well, so I'm curious, you are a company that sells a whole ingredient pet food, so nothing synthetic in it, and it's a dried pet food, but it's not your classic dried pet food. The way I describe it to a lot of people, and tell me if I'm wrong, is kind of like a jerky consistency. How did you land on that final product as opposed to a kibble or a fresh food? I know you mentioned some of the issues with fresh, but I'm curious how you landed on that one specifically.
You know, it really was just the means to the ends of how do we provide the healthiest, best possible dog food in the world that's also convenient. And so we looked at a lot of different manufacturing methods, traveled the world, went to all different sorts of factories and kitchens. And what we found is that, you know, when you think of like a dry dog food, a kibble, it's actually made in this very specific, highly refined manufacturing process called hot extrusion. And the reality is that what we learned is that process has all these constraints to it that wouldn't allow us to do what we wanted to do from a nutrition standpoint. So for example, you could only use up to 25% wet ingredients, including meat, fruits, vegetables, everything, because you're making this sort of dough. And so we sort of realized, well, if we want, you know, higher meat content, if we want, you know, higher bioavailability and to hit the nutrition specs using whole ingredients, that was just a dead end. We wouldn't be able to do it that way. And so then it was like, well, we need something else. And ultimately, you know, we basically ended up piggybacking on the snack jerky supply chain. So our food to this day is actually made in a USDA monitored jerky kitchen that makes snack jerky for Whole Foods that, you know, sold to humans. And, you know, that we realized enabled us to basically not have any of these constraints. So we essentially had no like theoretical limit. We could just start with basically as much meat, fruits, veggies as we wanted, then essentially, you know, gently dehydrate them. It preserved more of the nutrients. And, you know, it's funny when people, you know, some people look, it's human grade, so it's safe to eat. But when people try it and they're like, oh, this, you know, this doesn't taste very good. It's like, yeah, it's not flavored for human taste buds. It, right. You know, we didn't add any sriracha or something. But yeah. Funny enough, you know, if you want to know what it tastes like flavored for human taste buds, you know, check out, you know, these jerky brands that are made on the same line and have some teriyaki seasoning in them. And that's basically the same thing. You know, it's maybe a little bit more salt and sugar in there is not quite as healthy as Sundays, but that will get you the idea. And so, yeah, it was really just, you know, what manufacturing process would enable us to deliver on the health and quality and taste benefits we wanted. And by process of elimination, that ended up just basically being jerky manufacturing.
That's so interesting. And I think it's really smart because you looked at something like kibble and said, you know, we can't get the meat content that we want to in there. How could we provide something shelf stable with a high amount of meat? Well, jerky, I mean, that's exactly what it is high amount of meat or only meat. And it's, you know, air dried or dehydrated to some degree. So really,
for sure. The only other sort of fun learning I would add, and maybe fun's the wrong word for it, but you know, one of the things you realize that basically a couple different things make snack jerky shelf stable. The biggest thing is the dryness, but also the sugar and the salt content in them help to make it stable. And so for a you know, healthy dog food that dogs are eating every day, we couldn't use salt and sugar in those amounts. And so that kind of became, you know, an interesting challenge and problem we had to figure out of how can you make it shelf stable without, you know, the salt and sugar and some of the preservatives that they're adding to snack jerky. And, you know, it was a fun problem to solve that we obviously ultimately figured out, but, you know, definitely makes me, you know, makes you realize also, you know, I'm a big jerky fan myself, but, you know, more salt and sugar in those foods than you would think.
Yeah, that makes sense. I totally get that.
So can you two dive into the core principles of Sunday's food for dogs and how it aims to provide a balanced nutritional solution for dogs?
Yeah, so we started out with going down this path of creating our own food. I said to Michael, you know, as a veterinarian, it really bothers me how there's all these dog food companies out there that claim to be better, that claim to be, you know, quote unquote, all natural or human grade, but in reality, they're all just like marketing terms. And so I said, Michael, like, if we're going to do these things, we're not going to have asterisks. We're not going to have explanations. We're just going to be these things. And so that's where the challenge really came in. So for example, I would say almost every other dog food out there on the market, when they say all natural, there's a little asterisk and it says with added vitamins and minerals. And I said, I don't want an asterisk. I said, if we're all natural, we're all natural, period. Same thing with human grade. A lot of foods will say, oh, you know, we're human grade ingredients or we have human grade manufacturing. We are human grade from the ingredients we purchase from kind of restaurant supply places to the, you know, production, to the packaging, to the fulfillment. Everything we do, every step along the way is the exact same journey. And I would argue in some ways an even, you know, higher quality journey than some human food manufacturers provide and do. So we really, you know, when I set out to start this journey with Michael, I kind of, you know, I think that I slowed us down a lot, but that's okay. Like, I'll take the fault for that, and I'll take the fall for that. But I really slowed us down because I wasn't going to let us get to launch and get to market unless we were doing everything, you know, exactly how I felt was the best possible way to do things.
That's amazing. So I'm curious about the very first version of Sundays, because to the processing method that you use is very specific. And I'm sure that came after looking at a lot of different options. So what was the first recipe like? Did you develop it fresh and then air dry it? Did you develop the first recipe once you actually found this manufacturer?
Well, it's funny that you say first recipe, because we probably had over 100 iterations before.
Wow.
So it's like, oh, first recipe, like, that's cute. That was like probably 150 iterations ago. And now we've gotten better and we're, you know, more familiar. But, you know, the way we are making food, like the software where you balance diets, it doesn't do that. Like, that's not how. So it was a lot of trial and error, which is a lot of time and a lot of money. But once again, we are not willing to compromise on that.
And just to kind of let the audience know how kibble is typically formulated, because it relies so heavily on synthetic vitamins and minerals, literally what you do is you basically say, you know, like, hey, this is what we think the food's going to be. And then you just use software to say, hey, we're just going to dump in this amount of vitamin A, this amount of vitamin B or whatever. And because they're synthetic vitamins, and it's so, you know, like known how the manufacturing process works, you can literally design it on a computer and it basically spits out the recipe you need. But again, when you're using all natural whole food ingredients, you literally don't know, right? So you have to say, hey, like, we need a little bit more potassium. Let's increase the zucchini. Oh wait, that's too much zucchini. It's like causing it to dry slow. Let's like throw in a little bit, you know, of more pumpkin. And so we literally just kind of had to play that game a whack-a-mole, wow. Like, for literally like over 100 times until we dialed it in. And, you know, now we have this sort of encyclopedic knowledge of, you know, if you need more manganese, this is like, these are the foods that have that in really high doses. And, you know, so now it's a little bit different, but it took a long time.
Yeah. I'm not sure if either of you, have you ever used animal diet formulator?
Yeah.
That's the one that we use for a lot of like our consultations and stuff. And it's always so interesting to learn, like, oh, you need more manganese. You go double click on the little part and it brings up a little list of everything you can add. But it's like, it's so complex. And I think what a lot of people don't realize, and we didn't either until we started talking to a lot of different pet food companies, is there's already so much variation in the nutrient level of certain parts of animals. For example, Billy was talking about a piece of liver that was cut into three different pieces and sent off to a lab to be tested. Three different labs. And every single piece came back with different nutrient levels. And so I think, like, we got to get our food to be, you know, complete and balanced. And we want to try to get as many nutrients as we possibly can. But there's so much variance even in commercial pet food, you know?
It's so interesting you say that, because that's frankly something we like still kind of deal with to this date of, you know, just seasonality and fat contents of different proteins and fruits and vegetables, depending on the time of year they're harvested. And so, you know, we need to build in buffer and margin of error, because again, when you're using real ingredients, you know, if it's a rainy season or whatever, I mean, that can totally change the amount of a certain nutrient in a whole
exactly
food.
Yeah, and especially like what the animals are eating. Are they eating grass? Are they eating grain? That's going to vastly change the omega-3 to 6 ratios and stuff. So yeah, it's absolutely crazy. So with Sundays, what are you hoping it does for pet parents that a lot of the conventional food is falling short in?
You know, I think I hope it provides the best possible, while also the most convenient way to feed your dog. I think that, look, I wish I could sit here and say I home cook for my dog every night, but I don't even home cook for my family. Sorry, Michael. Every night.
Same.
It's just one of those things. It's just one of those things where, like, I wish I was that person, but I'm not that person. And I also wish I was the kind of person that kept, you know, a huge refrigerator full of all these things and was formulating diets. I'm not. I'm not that kind of person. And so I know me. And if I can have something that's, you know, as healthy as a fresh diet, but as easy as just pouring kibble into a bowl. Like, I hate to admit it, but like, I think there, you know, I think there's something like amazing about that. It's just like the ease of it. And I want to make it easy for dog parents to do the best thing for their dog. And I think that there's so much kind of guilt associated with a lot of, you know, dog care and pet care now. And I hate that aspect, right? I know that, you know, most dog parents are doing everything they can for their dog. And I just want to help them make just the easiest, healthiest choice.
So sort of a tagline we've been kicking around internally is this idea of like real food for real life, right? Of sort of just like, you know, this kind of pragmatic, real approach to, hey, you know, we make the world's best dog food, but in a way that is accessible. And, you know, and it's funny, on brand, Mabel actually just pushed open the door of the room we're in,
like,
and
who's here?
And just strolled in. So our other two dogs were with us. She's like, where is everybody? But yeah, just, you know, just this idea of making human grade real dog food more accessible to people. And because, you know, I think that as great as like home cooking or some of the like refrigerated options are, I just think, you know, that's just going to be unrealistic in terms of time and money for the vast majority of dog parents. But, you know, we'd love to live in a future where, you know, the majority of dog parents can, you know, are able to feed a food like Sundays because it's at a more accessible price point and it's just, you know, more convenient and you could, something you just dump in a bowl.
Absolutely. And the fact of the matter is, I think right now, at least still 80-85% of people feed kibble or some sort of dry food. And so if they're going to feed a dry food, which they obviously are, let's try to make it something that is packed with nutrients and not with just synthetic vitamins and minerals. So I really like that line of thinking.
Okay, Dr. Tori, you did a research at the Penn Working Dog Center. Is that correct?
Yes, I was lucky enough to be involved with the Working Dog Center when it initially got started at Penn. And that was an incredible experience. I actually met some of the dogs from 9/11 who have since passed away.
Wow.
You know, it was a long time ago. But that was one of the most amazing experiences of my life. And I feel very lucky to have worked alongside incredible people and dogs to help kind of get the Working Dog Center started.
I just wanted to know some of your insights or research you did. I actually grew up with a girl and her mom does a lot of working dog things. Mm-hmm. And also we're in Wyoming and then went to New York during 9/11.
I think they're like cadaver dogs, like dogs to find.
Yeah. You know, her mom is like one of the top cadaver dog trainers.
Yeah.
So that's a little connection. But can you tell us about some of your insight and research that you did with them?
Yeah, so actually when I was an undergrad, I worked in a dog genetics laboratory. I'm one of my other passions. I find dog genetics very fascinating. You know, each breed, this is kind of a side note, dorky note, but like every single breed of dogs represents a closed population, which from a genetic standpoint is just super fascinating. And dogs, because they're so inbred, most of our DNA in people, most of the DNA we have, it really doesn't code for much. A lot of it is, you know, just random letters of, you know, DNA sequence, and it's not really coding for much. But in dogs, since they're so inbred, a lot of the differences in their DNA actually does code for things, if that makes sense. So most dogs have very similar DNA, but the parts that differ often code for things, which is very different than people. And so because of that, dogs represent a very interesting kind of animal model for human disease and for things like cancer and other hereditary issues. And so kind of to make a long story short, in undergrad, I was very interested in dog genetics. I worked in a dog genetics lab at the Cornell Vet School while I was an undergraduate. And then when I was in grad school, I helped establish a genetic database for the Penn Vet Working Dog Center for working dogs. And one of the things they were looking at is, you know, was there, could there be a genetic signature that predisposed dogs to being good working dogs versus, you know, washouts? Like, so for example, could you go to a shelter and instead of, you know, putting in thousands and thousands of dollars and years of training into this crazy lab puppy, could you just do like a cheek swab and see, you know, would this dog make a good working dog candidate? Unfortunately, obviously, you know, we're far off from that science because it's obviously behavior is a very complex genetic trait, but just the idea behind being able to find those genetic signatures for complex behaviors is something that the Working Dog Center is obviously long-term would love to do. And so I helped establish a genetic database. A lot of that was because I had that background from my research at Cornell. So both really eye-opening, super interesting experiences. And to this day, I'm still very interested in dog genetics and just something I find very fascinating.
That's so interesting. I have read a very small amount on dog genetics and it is so far over my head, but I'm curious.
Sorry, I did not mean to go over your head.
No, it's okay. I still like it. No,
not you, but the,
just the like little, whole concept.
Yeah, that we've read.
I'm curious though. So you were looking for genetic markers that might tell whether a dog would be a good working dog or not. Do you ever believe that there could be a genetic marker for something related to canine nutrition?
For sure. I mean, I think there's already proven to be. I mean, so just to clarify, I myself never did that research, but that's kind of what was the ultimate goal of what we were doing and why I was helping establish that genetic database. But for example, you know, in Labrador retrievers, it's known that there is a genetic issue that causes them to digest copper differently. So it's, you know, a big thing in Labrador breeders, you know, very good Labrador breeders right now, is to test for this genetic trait. And, you know, if their dog is a carrier, obviously not to breed a carrier to a carrier, and that to make sure to feed a copper restricted diet. There's actually discussion right now. There's currently not a maximum amount of copper allowed in a diet. There's only
minimum. We heard about this recently.
Discussions right now that they're going to add a maximum, which a lot of it's funny because I have a Labrador and I compete in dog sports with my dogs. And so I'm kind of in the lab world and there's a lot of talk of, you know, making sure that your diet is copper restricted to, you know, make sure that you're not feeding too much copper because there is that predilection for copper storage disease in Labradors, which was found to have a genetic component. So there, I'm sure there are a multitude of others. And I mean, that's just a simple gene. I'm sure there's many complex genes that are related to nutrition.
Yeah. Well, it makes me think of like genes when we first got the Aussies, where like with I think it's with certain dogs with like white paws, you don't do the isoxazoline. Is that what it is? Or am I not remembering that correctly?
So you're talking about the MDR1 mutation, probably.
Yes.
And there are certain, heartworm medications that you have to avoid. And there are certain other medications that you avoid just because they can't process them. They have a mutation in one of their genes that causes them to not be able to process certain classes of medication. And so, you know, there's differing opinions on exactly kind of what exactly you need to stay away from. But it's obviously, if you ever get an Aussie mix or, you know, border collie mix from a shelter, I always strongly recommend having that MDR1 mutation test done just to make sure your dog doesn't have that.
Right. So it's interesting. I'm curious your opinion, Dr. Torrey, on the breed specific formulations that are out there, because my original opinion is like kind of a lot of BS, a lot of marketing, you know, a lab form or not a lab, but like the golden retriever puppy on like Royal Canin or something. But now I'm starting to think that there really could be something to breed specific recipes if they relate to something like the copper issue with labs. So what's your opinion on them?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is marketing in the sense that I think that at the end of the day, dogs are still very closely related, even if, you know, there are breed differences. Mabel just went and sat in a chair. Mabel. she's a piece of work. But I also think that like, there's no reason to feed any breed of dog a high copper diet. Like, I think that, you know, the things that we're doing because, you know, there are labs that are predisposed to copper issues, like there's no reason that your Shih Tzu needs a ton of copper. Like, I think that while there are obviously some breed specific issues, I think overall, a lot of the nutrition learnings that can, you know, be extrapolated from certain issues with certain breeds, I think can apply to a lot of other breeds. So I think that feeding your dog, you know, a fresh food that is made with fresh ingredients and with, you know, as many vitamins and minerals from natural sources as possible is a lot better than feeding, you know, a golden retriever specific diet. And I also feel that feeding your dog to appropriate body condition score and, you know, making sure that they're not overweight is probably a lot more beneficial than a food that's marketed towards bulldogs or whatnot. So I think they're, you know, obviously talk to your veterinarian and get recommendations, but I think that there is definitely a marketing angle to a lot of those breed specific diets, but there are certain things like, you know, bulldogs have a predilection for being overweight. Labs have a predilection for being overweight. So I think, you know, paying attention to that and those diets may be, you know, leaner and have higher protein and lower fat. And there's definitely something to be said for that.
Before we wrap up here, I want to know what is in store for the future of Sundays for Dogs. Cause right now you have a line of three different food recipes, correct? Do you plan on expanding into any other sector of the pet industry, any other animals? What do we think here?
I know everyone always asks us for cat food. And I mean,
I bet.
I personally like cats. Michael's actually like severely allergic. If I come home from the
me
clinic.
Me and you both,
I,
Michael.
If I've worked with cats, he's not like, oh my God, take off the scrubs. Like I can't, like, I can tell you what cats today. So no, we have no plans to go into cats, although here.
Yeah, I mean, I think for us, like, we're just really laser focused on, you know, making the world's best dog food. And for the foreseeable future, we, you know, have a ton of plans to, like, further improve our existing recipes, add some more proteins, you know, figure out maybe some slightly different, like, SKUs and different ways to, like, onboard to the product, you know, different sizes, things like that. And look, I think eventually, you know, in the far out future, there's probably some other things that we can do for dogs. But we just think that of all the different ways that, you know, we're uniquely capable to make life easier for modern dog parents, just delivering the best possible food in the easiest possible way is really, you know, kind of our ability to like uniquely contribute. And so we're just focused on, you know, just kind of getting a little bit better with this core food product every day. And so, you know, be on the lookout for, you know, early next year, we have a new protein that we're very excited about. That's kind of a fun story behind it that we're going to launch next spring. And then, you know, just kind of, you know, have some other fun improvements to our current recipes on the roadmap as well of just, you know, finding ever better ingredients and sourcing and things like that, just so we can, you know, just keep making the world's best dog food even better.
Where did the name Sundays come from?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's funny. Like we would joke that, you know, on Sunday is like the one day of the week where neither of us would work and that our dogs would know what day of the week it was somehow. Like they had a calendar or something where like they'd wake up on Sunday mornings and like, you know, pawed us on the bed and like know that this was a day that they got to spend quality time with us. And so we felt like, you know, that was such a perfect metaphor for what we were trying to do by making this healthier, easier dog food of giving you more quality time with your dogs. Because if there's one bad thing you can say about dogs is that, you know, unfortunately we don't get enough time with them. They, you know, don't have the same lifespans as we do. And so our attitude is, you know, in addition to eating healthier food that hopefully gives you more quality years with your dog, that, you know, you also have more quality in those years by being able to spend that time with them doing things and not, you know, thawing their food or something for 2 hours a day. And so that's kind of where the name came for. And, you know, again, if we liked cats more, Saturdays for Cats is just sitting right out there for the taking, but you know, probably that's not great. Something we're gonna be doing.
I feel like cats would be more of like a Monday vibe, like
yeah. That might be a tough sell to people. Sundays is nice and warm, Monday would not be great.
The cats great. Would like it though more than
I'm sure they would. So the last thing, I'm sure a lot of our audience is going to be interested in both of you and what you have to offer. So where can they find you? Website, social media, things like that.
Probably the best source for us is sundaysfordogs.com. And that's our socials, you know, Instagram, TikTok, Sundays for Dogs. And then social media, personal presences. We don't have, I'd say, the most active, but
our Sundays for Dogs social media account is fabulous. And I often post a lot about there. And for example, today we just published a blog on this new novel respiratory illness that has a lot of people concerned in the dog world. And so that article published today, and I think it'll be on our social. So we try to stay up to date as much as possible. And with our blog, anything that, you know, unfortunately needs our attention, we try to, you know, give it our attention as soon as possible.
Yeah. And we're also very accessible, like just via email, even just Michael or Tori with a Y at sundaysfordogs.com is a great way to get in touch.
I do have Tori with an I though, if you do email me there.
Oh, smart.
Also Troy and many other permutations will go to her. So.
Got it. That's really smart. Well, thank you so much for being on today. Like we said earlier, I think there's something to be said about business owners who are willing to be this transparent, especially with people that, you know, have an audience and share this stuff to the masses. So really means the world to us.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having us on. We really appreciate it. It was great to chat. And as I said, for you or anybody in the audience, feel free to reach out anytime.
Yeah, thank you guys so much. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, of course. And for those of you that are listening or watching, thank you so much for choosing to spend your time with us today. As always, I'm Bryce.
I'm Kinsey.
And we'll see you in the next episode.